I am so excited about the guests that I have today, and I am so thrilled to embark on this journey of exploration and transformation with you. I'm your host, Yvonne McCoy, and I bring almost 30 years of entrepreneurial experience and a passion for discovering growth through the power of seemingly small change. And I want to thank you for taking the time out of your week. And this week, I have got a delight for you from down under, Misty Hinkle. And she's going to share some amazing things. And she is going to, we have laughed together so much that I know that you're going to enjoy this and you're going to find something unexpected that's going to help you to transform and grow in both your personal and your professional life. Misty, thank you for joining us. This is actually a decent hour for you. This is 7:30 in the morning instead of like 2:30 in the morning.
Yeah, 100%. This is like lunchtime for me. Seriously, I've just come from having a bowl of spaghetti bolognese. So, like, I get up at crazy o'clock. I've got two golden retrievers. It's screaming hot where I live because it's now summer. So, in American terms, we average 100 degrees. I'm in Chinchilla, Australia, so Queensland, Australia. And we pretty much get from November through to April 100 degrees every single
Your
day.
summer, right?
Yeah, for our summer. And so I've got one golden retriever, big, heavy boy that says, yeah, I'm not going out in the sun. And a little girl who says, I'll sunbake all day. And but she says, but let's go for a walk an hour before the sun gets up. So and the sun now gets up here at about 4:30 in the morning. So I have to get up early because the dogs run around the house crazy, going, it's time.
We have to focus because we have too much
Oh,
fun.
we're focused.
We have
We're
to
focused.
focus. So,
That's so a bit about me. That's it. Crazy
tell,
life.
besides the fact that you have two dogs and it's really hot,
Yeah.
tell everybody what it is you do and what was the small change that brought you to help you get to this place.
Okay. So I'm a sales trainer. So I teach sales training. What do I do? Yeah, I teach sales. I teach people how to sell. Actually, I get people to sell, Yvonne. It's one thing to learn, right? But anyone can learn. Everybody I've ever taught sales to, they've all done some sort of sales program, whether we've read a book or we've done a program or we've had it in our job. There's some sort of sales training in everything that we do. But I find that about 99% of people who've done sales training fail to sell. So then, what's the problem? Why is it that few, but some can sell, but most do not? Sales anxiety. So I just fix the sales anxiety in people. So ultimately, as a sales trainer, I say, my job is to get you to sell, and I'll do whatever is necessary to make that happen. And I'm very devious about it. I impart knowledge in such a way that people come back to me and say, oh my God, I can't unhear what you say. And even if I don't want to be a salesman, I'm now doing it. It's like you're sitting on my shoulder, whispering in my ear. Just say that. Don't say that. No. Just tell them the price. Stop talking. Stop doing that. And so I imagine myself as I don't know, little devil, but in white with wings, but
That's
dressed
called
up
an
as a devil
angel.
with a tail.
That's called an angel. Without the tail, it's called an angel.
Oh, yeah, no. They've got the tail. They've got the horns.
And did they get the
They've got
crown
that
too?
devious little look and they're whispering.
Did they get the crown too?
Oh yeah, they have a crown and then a halo.
So what was it that made you realize that people needed this and that you were good at delivering it?
Okay, so I was quiet as a kid growing up. I was very quiet and wanted lots of friends, didn't really have a huge amount. I didn't know how to speak to anyone, couldn't cope with more than one person at a time because I struggled to get into any conversation. So by the time I was 18, I decided I had to be a barmaid because barmaids were popular by everybody by default. So I've just gone, okay, cool, I'll do a bar course, I'll be a barmaid. So inside that, and I mean, my job was, and I followed instructions really well. So my job was nobody leaves until they've got no money left in their wallet. Okay, no problems. And really good at my job. Like I used to think, but I also love money. Like I was one of those kids that saw a coin, discovered it, bought chocolate, but oh, so we must have heaps of this, right? So I just liked money from a very young age. And then how do you get it, right? Working definitely is it. But then I would look at jobs. The other side of being a barmaid is you can get tips. Not here in Australia, we don't do tips. But my thought was over in America, they do. So I could just be a barmaid and then go over to America and I could earn tips. And I have to say, I would earn a lot of tips if I lived over in America, because I'm really good at what I do when I'm talking to someone and getting them to buy drinks and food and, I just have a bit of a chat and I move on and I help others and come back. My mom used to say to me, "Oh, but you're just a barmaid." I'm not just a barmaid, mum. I'm the best barmaid in the world. People will come into the pub with no money. They'll leave with even less. They don't blame me for it. They come back the next day. I'm very good at what I do, but it's only because of the atmosphere that I would give them. Come in, relax. I'll sort out the food and drink. I'll put some music on for you. You play a bit of pool. Come back to the bar, have something to eat. So, I just have a friendly way about me. Now, all the sales I did over here in Australia. So I started as a barmaid for 10 years. I then moved into furniture, selling furniture. Sold Apple computers. These are the main jobs. I've done heaps of jobs, but these are the main ones, and they've all been sales ones. Worked at government offices selling patent and trademark applications. Also worked in the government office of child services, taking 50 angry phone calls a day from childcare centres whose parents hadn't paid them for looking after their children. So I learned dispute resolution over the phone from those things, and as well as in retail jobs, you get that in retail jobs. Bar jobs, if somebody is too drunk, you have to stop them from drinking. So you can see there's a bit of dispute resolution will go on in that area as well. I'm not drunk, and yet you're yelling at me. So, it's a bit of a problem. So, amongst all of this, particularly as a barmaid for 10 years, you have to learn how to speak. How do you get so much? How do you get someone to stay for such a long time and get them to spend so much money? You have to learn to talk to them. And so inside of all of this, I'd fallen in love with the whole idea of selling more, adding on, helping a person out, giving them what they
Can
want.
I stop you right there?
Yeah.
Because I think you just hit on a really important thing. And
Yeah.
that is that if you are selling a service that a person needs, you're actually helping them. Do you know? You're helping them discover
Shocking, isn't it?
that you have a solution for them. I had a couple of sales jobs, not a lot. But I had one of, I told you, one of the sales jobs that I had was at a costume jewelry counter. And some of that was just ugly. It was past ugly. It was oogly. It was so bad. And people would come up to me and say, "Do you like this?" And I was like, "Nobody in their right mind would like this, right?" But you can't say that. So I would say, "Well, what's important is that you like this. How are you going to use it?" And they would say to me, "Well, I'm going to use it on this." And I'd say, "That's too heavy for that. You need." And it got to the point that people actually came back to the costume jewelry and asked for me. I had a following because I was helping them not only, pick out the right things, but show them how to wear it. I mean, it was weird,
Absolutely. You're helping somebody do something. So let's say if someone come into the pub to have a couple of drinks, right? They've come in just to have a couple of drinks. Maybe they had a hard day at work. Maybe they had a great day at work, whatever it might be. But how long they stay, won't you stay for dinner? I'll get you a couple more drinks, stay for dinner, I'll call you a taxi, whatever it might be, right? And they might have come in because they were down in the dumps. But seriously, they came in because they're not feeling that great. So my job is to make them feel better. And they get to leave having felt better by the end of the day. So ironically, what I sold wasn't necessarily what they paid for was the food and the drink, but what I sold was something else, them feeling better. I remember when I was about 25, I was living in a small town. I was there for 3 years and I was in a small town in this pub there, and there was one of the locals. He was one of the he was actually one of the local police, that but he was in civilian clothes and he had the week off, whatever. He was on holiday. So he was in the pub and he was having a drink and he was chatting to all the locals and he was talking about the news. And he was only about the same age as me, right? So he's only young and, talking to everyone in the pub. And this visitor was driving through because this small town that I lived was halfway between Sydney and Adelaide. So it's like 8 hours from anywhere in the middle of nowhere. And he'd stop. So it was like the overnight place where you'd stop on your way to Sydney or Adelaide. And he said, that guy there, he said, geez, he's really knowledgeable. He knows everything about town. He knows what's going on in the news. And I said, yeah. I said, I'm rubbish with the news. Like, I don't retain any of it. He's really smart. He's really clever. I said, that's not my space at all. And this guy said to me, he said, no, he said, but you've got something that's more important, I think. And I said, what's that? And he said, you have the ability to make people feel good. And that's is the secret to selling, right? I say this in sales classes all the time. The nicest person gets the money. You only have to be the nicest person in the room, and you will end up with the work.
Well, all right. So I'll tell you, like I used to say about, if I had to pick a doctor or a dentist or something, if I'm going to spend the money, I want somebody I like. Do you know?
Just
I mean,
giving money to a dickhead. We have to work way too hard to earn our money. We're not handing it over to just anybody. It's
well,
not the service that we're buying, it's the person we're buying it from. That's where we're spending the money. Yeah, absolutely.
It sounds crazy, but I'm a big woman, but I happen to have a small mouth. So whenever I go to the dentist, especially if I have a guy, the ends of my mouth are cracked, right?
Yep.
And the first time I had a woman dentist, I said to her, "Oh my God, this is wonderful. My mouth is not mangled." And she goes, "Yeah, dentists have small hands." And I'm like, "I gotta remember that." I mean, and I went back to her for years. I mean, she was a good dentist, but that extra little thing that I needed. And I think that's, what part of what I say when I'm talking about your unique power in terms of attracting clients, right? Because they automatically understand and connect with you. So they want to spend time with you. They want to spend money with you. And I think the other thing that's so important is making people feel it's okay. And I think, I am a sucker for the line, "It's not your fault." I love it when somebody goes, "If you haven't done this, it's not your fault," because whatever the case may be,
Yeah. I give you permission. That one's mine.
Yeah.
I give you permission. No, it's okay. I'll have someone come to sales classes with me, or maybe just initial consult, and they'll say, "Why didn't I do this years ago?" I say, "Because years ago you probably wouldn't have listened to me because you weren't ready for this part yet." Right? Even when I ran sales classes, for the last 5 years I've run sales classes. It's a bit like a gym timetable, right? You pay a membership for the whole year. I run five live classes a week, like online live classes a week. It'll be one topic across all five, so that then, it doesn't matter which one of the classes you come to, you're getting the same topic, right? And then someone will say, "I haven't been to the last five classes." Then you didn't need them. You didn't need those ones yet. You just didn't need them. You need the one that you're at now, and maybe any of the others. You might need those, but we don't know. Go to the ones you can get to, and we'll just fine-tune things as we go along. Like, I would lose people. So let's say a year's worth of sales classes. Technically, that's 52 classes, right? But I could easily lose someone within two or three classes because the class that they came into fixed the bit that was broken in them. They didn't need 50 ideas, like, or 50 different ways to sell or 50 bits to fix. Once they fix one bit, often that's the bit that they kept breaking. And now that they don't break that anymore, the customers are going from lead to convert. And now I don't see them anymore. I'm like, I miss you in class. I'm so sorry, I've become so busy. Ever since doing that one class, I've become so busy. I've gone, well, then you don't need to be in class. So actually, it all worked.
And I think the other thing is sometimes it's a combination of where you are when you hear the information. I mean, in the journey, right? And it's also the way that it's delivered and who delivers it to you. So I have a business bud that we do joint working together every morning. And I find that I have to come back to her at least, a couple of times a year and go, okay, I know you said this to me, but I finally got it. Don't be mad. That you told me this months ago, and I didn't understand it. I didn't want to hear it or whatever, but I just heard it from somebody else, and I'm in a different place. So now I get it. I get what you were trying to tell me before. So I think part of that is it's not one, it's okay. People don't know they need something until somebody else can kind of explain it to them. I mean,
Agree with
don't.
this. Repetition, repetition, repetition. If anyone were to come to 50 classes of mine over the course of a year, they'll probably find half a dozen of those classes. I'm just repeating. It's really about 6 to 10 classes, and I'm going to repeat, and I'm going to repeat, and I'm going to repeat. But there's certain elements that you'll repeat the whole 50 times, right? Learning to say your price, you're going to repeat that all year long, every single time. And how much does it cost? And how much does it cost? And how much does it cost? Right. So there's certain elements you have to repeat because it takes that long for you to get used to saying it without being anxious.
And that's what I do when I do. I talk to people about having. I don't like the idea of saying pitch when you do. I prefer the introduction because I want them to think about I'm introducing myself into a relationship. I want it to be conversational. So, all right, I hate to do this, but we have got so much more to cover and so little time to do it in. So, what I want you to tell us is what are three things that we can do right away to help us increase our sales.
Okay, here it is, right? So I've written a book. It's called How to Go from No Sales to Sales in 5 Easy Steps. And there's technically five, but the first three get the sale. So I'll tell you what they are. Step number one, get known for the thing that you sell. If you're a network marketer, the most important advertising tool that you have in your arsenal is the company name. If you don't say the company name, you can't sell it. I get really surprised to find that there's network marketing companies that have been out there, great ones, for like 20 years and nobody's ever heard of them. How did you manage to last that long when nobody knows you exist? But anyhow, the fact that you have, right? It doesn't mean that they're a bad company because no one knew. It meant they lasted 20 years, right? But your company name. In today's world, customer will not buy until they've Googled, so you might as well tell them what to Google and don't worry about if they find a good or a bad review. Because truthfully, if you're saying that you love it and they find a bad review, they're going to go, well, who's this anonymous person? If you don't say the company name, someone thinks they work it out and Google it and find a bad review. I go, no wonder you never said the name. So if you're a network marketer, the company name is the most important advertising tool you have. The second most important thing is pick one thing that you like the most in the company. Better to sell one product 1,000 times than to sell 1,000 products to one person. Once they're exhausted, you have no more customers. But 1,000 customers who bought one thing, you got 1,000 customers. You can sell them a second thing. Just concentrate on selling one thing. Customer tends to buy more all by themselves. Quick
And that,
question, Yvonne. Have you ever done the grocery shopping before? You ever gone into a grocery store?
not
Bought some
often.
groceries? Right. Imagine that you're going in to buy milk, right? Just milk. Right? It sits on the shelf. Nobody helps you. You just go in, you get it, right? And then along the way, you probably leave after spending, what, $30 worth of stuff.
Because
Nobody helped you. You got in the store. You're fine.
there's a whole science about the layout of grocery stores. The milk is at the furthest diagonal corner to the
It is. And you have to
store.
cut through the chocolate line in order to get there.
You have to
Like,
go through
you have
everything.
to. Chocolate is like, because, we're going to check that one out anyway. We may as well just have a look. But here it is. Step number one, get known for the thing that you sell. It includes your company name. It includes your name, maybe the person you help, the thing that you like the most, one thing that you sell, right? Mine's sales training. Do it in book format, right? I've got a book. It's called Sell Like a Rockstar. There you go. You'll know me as a girl who sells Sell Like a Rockstar, right? Now, get known for the thing that you sell. Number two, deliver the price. If you can't say the price, they can't buy it. It's $11. There it is. It's a book. It's $11, right? And then be silent. If the customer knows what you sell and how much it costs and you're quiet, the customer can choose to buy. The customer doesn't need to be sold to, particularly not in today's world. Before Google, the customer went to the salesman to ask for help because they didn't know anything and the salesman knew everything. Because of Google, the customer goes to Google first and knows everything related to their problem. Not everything the salesman knows, just everything related to their problem. So when they go to a salesman, they consider the salesman a little part of Google, just the bit they couldn't get the answer for. So they only need their questions answered. The customer already sold themselves. Salesman thinks they have to tell them everything, that they are Google. Salesman's not Google anymore. They're a tiny part of Google. The salesman is there now to help the customer end up with the thing. And how they help is they stand there silently and maybe facilitate the sales transaction at the end. But the customers bought it themselves in their head, and they're really just vetting, is this a nice person I'm going to give my cash to? Or is it a not nice person that I'm not going to give my cash to? And really, that's what they're vetting for, right? So if we go back to my shopping scenario, right? Anyone can say, oh, but I need to do this, I need to do this, and I need to speak features and benefits. But as a customer, this is how we buy. Every time we can go into a store by ourselves, look at the stuff on the shelf that are advertising themselves on the shelf with their price, and make an informed decision as to whether or not we're going to buy it. And because the stuff is silent while it's sitting there with its price, we now have to talk to ourselves about why we're buying it. I shouldn't buy it. Chocolate, I could get it for $3. It's currently seven. It might be on special come Wednesday, but it looks really good. I can see how I'd have it. And when I go home and I'll be reading and I could have a cup of tea and it would go so nice. But we'll talk ourselves into it. We don't need the chocolate explaining itself to us. We'll do that one all by ourselves. Now, if that's how we buy groceries, honestly, that's how we shop for everything. So if we follow those three rules of say what it is, say the price and be silent, leave it up to the customer. The customer will do this all by themselves. Now, the customer's going to be in one of two spaces. They're either ready to buy, I'll grab it. And if they grab it and buy it, there is no buyer's remorse, not to the salesman, because they weren't convinced to do it. Now, they might go home and go, I shouldn't have bought that, but they won't blame the salesman if you're quiet. They'll blame themselves for having not asked enough questions or bought the wrong thing or convinced themselves of the wrong thing, but they'll never blame the salesman. But if you, as a salesman, try to convince them to buy before they're ready, if it goes wrong, they're going to blame you, not themselves. So the
So,
secret becomes, yeah.
I have to tell you my perfect story, what my
Okay.
lesson that I learned from this. And I used to sell a program that was, college prep program. And, the thing was that you were, the parent was paying, but the kid had to be convinced, kind of. The parent had to be convinced that the kid would actually use it. And I had a weekend where I had 100% sales. Everybody I talked to bought. And on Monday, I had 100% cancellation. So I had to learn to be quiet. I had to learn, because I was so,
You did your job,
I was
but
so,
you convinced them before they were ready.
I mean, it was like, I mean, I went home like, oh my God, look at all the sales I got. I couldn't believe the commission I was going to get. And then,
Wow.
the cancellation report came out. And I was like, and everybody in the company said, we've never seen anything like this before. So we are running.
Was amazing, but I actually didn't need the product. But I wanted to buy her, but I didn't need the product.
They needed the product, but I wasn't quiet, and I didn't let them decide for themselves.
Yeah.
So we're running out of time. You've got a free gift for us. What is it?
Sales game plan session. Anyone that wants to, 2025 is coming up, right? I mean, how many people to get on your podcast? 14,000? All right, let's go with this. Anyone who emails me and says, can I have a sales game plan session? I'll just give it to you. Takes about an hour. We just jump online and book it in. We jump online and we go through sales game plan. What is it that you want to sell next year? How much is of it do you want to sell? And then what's the strategy to get there? It's a good fun session. Yvonne, you did it. Did you do it the other day? I don't think you did it the other day. We
I
just caught
didn't do it.
up.
I'm going to
No,
jump on
you
and
didn't do
do
it. Oh, I'm going to book you
it.
in.
I'm definitely going to do this because you gave me some good tips just in our conversation that I've started to use. So I'm definitely going to jump on for a sales session with you. Okay. So here's the fun question. When was the last time you did something new for the last did something new for the first time?
So I'm learning about watermelon skiing. Because normally I talk sales, 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 right? And then I talk to the kids on the street about working and sales and money. But I'm recently looking into watermelon skiing. So where I live, we are the watermelon capital of Australia. And every 2 years we have a watermelon festival, and the highlight is watermelon skiing. Now, February of last year, I witnessed it.
Say, are you saying skiing?
Yeah, so picture this. Picture this. Imagine a black slip and slide that goes the full length of an oval, right? Well, the width of an oval, right? Kids' oval at a school, right? It's covered in crushed watermelons and water. You're standing at one end with a watermelon on each foot, holding onto a water ski tow rope. And at the other end is the winch that pulls you to the end. The goal is to stand the whole way. Now, I witnessed this and I really wanted to be a volunteer. And see, the people that go to the original, like, who wants to volunteer? These plans on being me because you end up on the news. I want to be on the news. Now, preferably, I'd like to be on the news standing at the other end and not being dragged across my stomach, through watermelons. But if that's the case, so I'm learning about it now. There are so many questions to ask. So I've practiced this out in the backyard with a black slip and slide, just soapy water. Couple of kids on each side of a rope that I'm holding on to, and they had to run to the end. And then I had to try and stand up, and it's all very tricky. No watermelons at the moment, just bare feet on soapy water. But it's all a bit tricky. I'm thinking I might need a couple of water skiing lessons just to sort of give me a bit of balance. You've got to hold on to the rope, whether it's crazy, but that's what I'm learning. But there's weird questions.
When is this actually happening?
February. It's in
February.
February.
So you
And I've
got.
been speaking to a water skier over in Wisconsin. I think that's where Kurt Roscoff is from. So anyhow, there's a guy that comes out networking all the time. His name is Kurt Roscoff. He's from the Disability Channel and he does all this cool stuff. And he gets people in wheelchairs water skiing. And so I've been talking to him about watermelon skiing. And given that it's their winter, they should start doing this. I think they'll do it a bit easier because some of them might be in a wheelchair. You just got to pull them across the. Yeah, who knows, like, but anyhow, it's crazy times. But questions are out there. What constitutes a good watermelon as a ski? And do you put your foot in the same ski as somebody else, or do you get fresh skis to have your turn?
All right, I'm gonna cut you off because we are running out of time. I am so sorry, and we will have to do this again for sure. I have to give the commercial, which is, for those of you that are here, I hope you will subscribe and share and
Subscribe,
engage
subscribe,
in the
subscribe.
podcast on social media. I can't stop laughing. I'm sorry. And one of the reasons I did this was it was a way for me to give back to the community. One of the things that I realized is that it's important to have a vibrant community and, as you're growing and you're having an impact. So I hope you will join me again on the One Small Change and we can embark on a journey that even the smallest shift can yield monumental transformations. You will never think about watermelons in the same way.
Here's my biggest concern, right? Now, here's my biggest concern, and here's the sales problem. Do they hose you off at the end? If you fall down and you're like dragged through the watermelons, do they hose you off at the end? Because here's the sales problem. If they don't, how do I convince my husband to let me in the car to get driven home? Or am I walking,
We'll put you in a
2 miles
garbage bag.
home in 100-degree heat?
We'll put
To
you in a
get to
garbage
a
bag.
hose.
Okay.
That's
So,
the sale.
are those your last words? How do I get home?
It's please let me in the car.
No, really. Give us
Oh no, okay, all
some
right.
words of wisdom so we
All right, here it is. The words of wisdom are this. Look, sales is really easy. Practice telling people what you sell and how much it costs. Don't worry about how you feel about the price. When somebody says, how much does it cost? Seriously, that's the question that all salesmen should be begging for someone to say. When they say, how much is it? They're only after a number. They're not after your thoughts or your emotions around money. They're only after the price, and they're not after an explanation. If you say the price and be silent, the customer can make an informed decision. It takes practice to do this, right? But on the other side of it, you might have, I'll just say this though, on the other side of it, you might have people concerned that they're going to say, oh my God, I'd never pay that. Understand this. If the customer seems a bit emotional about your price, it means, here it is, they were listening to you. And a person that's listening to you is a potential customer. If they're not emotional, they weren't listening. And it's very hard to end up selling something to someone who's not listening to you. So you want them to be emotional.
I can't
That's what's
wait to see the notes. I've never had anybody's last words be a whole paragraph. Okay. We have to stop because we are running out of time.
Okay.
And I've gotten myself together to stop laughing. So
Should I give my email address for if anyone wants to email me? Sales game plan.
we will put those in the notes.
Oh,
So
okay.
not to worry. So this is going to be the end, guys. We've got 2 seconds left. So I want you to remember that change is simple, but it's not always easy. It requires courage, resilience, and a willingness to step out of your comfort zone. And sometimes your comfort zone is that you're serious, and like me, you break out laughing hysterically. So I want you to join me for other episodes of the One Small Change as you embark on this bold journey and find some innovative possibilities. And till the next time, please stay curious and check out some of the other podcast episodes. Misty, thank you so much. And we have to go. Bye.
See you.